And welcome to West End Dumplings, the radio edition for August the 28th, 2016. Tonight, I'm joined by four fellow UMFM hosts that join me here in the studio for the final episode of the show's summer run. We're going to talk about UMFM, what it's like having a radio show, music, our favorite places around the city, the future of community radio, and we're going to pack that all into 1 hour. But first, I just want to set things up with a little bit of mood music, and this is Charlie Dore and Pilot of the Airways on 101.5 UMFM.
Pilot of the Airways, here is my request. You don't have to play it, but I hope you'll do your best. I've been listening to your show on the radio, and you seem like a friend to me.
Yes, she needs a dedication just the same. Late at night, I'm still listening. Don't waste my time chasing sleep. People say I look weary, but that's just the company I keep.
Ooh, you make the nighttime race. Ooh, I don't need to see your face.
You're sounding good.
There we go, and welcome back. Again, this is West End Dumplings, the radio edition, and tonight I have four show hosts with me in studio, and I thought what we'll do is we'll do a roundtable, starting with microphone number one, and just tell us who you are, what your show's called, and what time of day it is. Look at that. The pressure of having all these radio people staring at me. I knew I'd screw something up. There we go.
My name's Lyle Skinner, and I do the Waxy's Dargo show that comes on at 5 o'clock today. And we've been on the air since September 6, 1998.
Wow, one of the originals.
And he is an originator. Yeah, my name's Jeff Robson. I host Tell the Band to Go Home. It just ended, but I'm still here, and I've been doing it since 2 o'clock. I guess I started here at UMFM in spring of 2001. That show started in 2002, and I started doing free-range radio officially in 2003.
And I'm Penny Lane. I host Punks and Parkas, which is Thursday nights at 9 o'clock, and I've been doing my show since 2005.
And my name's Gail Comfort, and I do Comfort Cafe, which comes on at 6 o'clock, 6 to 7 today, Sundays. I had a previous show in the UK before that for about, 15 years or something like that.
Wow. Okay. Well, great. Well, thank you, everybody, for joining me. Most of us are Sunday people, and so a lot of us were hanging around here, except for Penny.
Except for me.
Yeah. So what's it like on a Sunday to be here?
It's so chill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can find
kids
parking.
Running around. You can find parking.
Yeah. No,
it's kind of nice.
It's not a bad time. So I'll start with Penny, because when I was on a show, I was on a panel show, so I didn't have to worry about any of the technology stuff. And when I decided to become a show host,
right.
You were the volunteer coordinator.
I was,
so
yes.
I got to sit in on some of your shows as you took me under your wing and taught me how to use the board, which after about 3 years, I've sort of
yeah.
Kind of figured most of the stuff out anyways. So so how long has Punks and Parkas been on the air?
This is my 11th year now.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a long time.
Yeah, well, not as long as some of these guys.
Yeah.
I feel like a baby.
Did you start off then? Were you a student here?
And I got used involved, to be a student, but I got involved after.
Oh, okay.
As odd as that is. Yeah, I met a fellow show host, The Invisible Man, who hosts, he used to be Right on Time. And now he hosts, I think it's just called The Invisible Man. And, he got me involved. He thought I'd be good at radio.
Oh, there
you go. He was right.
Yes.
Oh, thank you.
Now, musically, what's your show's definition of punk? Do you have a very strict, number of years and a strict geographic
stuff? Well, it's not really a punk show. That's the irony. The show is about the mod scene, which
yes.
is kind of, it started in the late 50s, early 60s in England, and it's kind of exploded and had many incarnations over the years, but it's a lot of very retro-sounding Brit Invasion, ska, Motown, soul, Northern soul, a lot of that kind of stuff. A lot of jazz lately, too, but I dip into all those sounds. I play punk. I do.
Yeah, but you don't strictly define it by, certain years or anything like
no,
that?
No, I try to encompass everything, because that the mod scene has really, it's reincarnated itself over and over and over again over the years, and so is the music, so I try to explore all of it.
Yeah. Now, you explore, it's more than just music. You kind of
right.
explore the mod subculture in general. You talk
exactly.
about movies. You talk about, goings-on in the community and that sort of thing. So it's kind of a lifestyle show for mods,
you
could call it. And so what you defined a little bit, what is the mod subculture? What is it to you?
What is it to me?
What do you look at something and say, wow, that's, that's mod?
A friend of mine kind of defined it really well. He's like, mod is kind of, it's paying attention to the details. It's style orientated. It's a little bit elitist. Mods always want to have the best looking stuff, the hardest to find music, the best music. It's a lot of finding that niche, I guess, in everything, but everyone defines it differently, which is kind of the fun part of it, which is, I guess, why I've had the show for 11 years, because there's so much to discover.
And when did you know you were a mod or a modette?
A modette. I guess that would happen when I was in university. I started to get into the style, and I've always been, my mother and I have always kind of really loved 60s music and the look and everything, and I just kind of met more people who were into the same thing as me, and they introduced me to movies and music and the scene, and I was like, oh, okay, so this is, it has a name. All the stuff I'm into kind of has a little box that you can kind of put yourself in. Yeah,
and there's been kind of a rejuvenation of mod culture. Now, is that a deep mod culture? Is that just the fashions and stuff that are coming back?
I think fashion comes back every 5 or 6 years, the 60s style comes back. Big time.
Yeah.
And
that's
kind of happened in the last few years, so.
Now, your show also has an international following.
Huge one.
In the mod community. both your show, and you're also involved with We Are the Mods.
Yes, which we've renamed it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but it's the same show. It's just we've broadened our horizons a bit more. It's called Maximum Rhythm and Booze.
Okay.
Now. Yeah, we like our puns. But it's the same crew of people, and we look at all different subcultures now. We've kind of opened it up. But both shows have huge listening audiences in the UK, which is amazing.
Yeah. I mean, you mustn't have thought that when you got started that you would have that sort of reach.
Never, ever. And I pinch myself every day, because I've been really lucky that, this station has led me to that show, which has led me to interviewing people I've admired and travel and, you know, trying new things with radio, which is just, it's amazing.
I remember back when I was in training, had my little in training badge on.
Badge.
That they make you wear here in the studio. There was a movie that had been released, and you were part of a campaign to get that released here. How did that end up?
It finally got released overseas.
Okay. And what was the movie?
It was called Svengali. It was a movie that one of my co-hosts on the other show, Johnny Owen, had written and directed and acted in. And the thing is, when he signed the original paperwork to do this movie, it was a UK release only.
Okay.
Because I didn't think it would really have much traction here, etc. But the movie did amazing in the UK. I got behind it here in North America, got in touch with other DJs, and we really made a push online, made a push with the label, and just a couple of months ago, it was available for download and purchase here.
There you go. The power of community radio.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
great.
Anything.
And, you know, I have to say, you are probably, if not the one of the longest serving female hosts at UMF now.
Next to this lady.
Yeah. So, and that's something I'll bring up again when we're doing the roundtable, when we're talking about people getting involved and that sort of thing. Next up, I want to talk to the wily veteran of the panel here. This is Lyle Skinner.
Skinner.
Yeah. Of Waxy's Dargle. And first of all, tell me, where does the title of the show come from? What is a Waxy's Dargle?
Well, there's a bit of debate what a Waxy's is. Some people say they're the Irish candlestick makers.
Okay.
And there's another group that says it's the shoemakers, because they waxed their thread and the laces to waterproof them. And they used to have an annual get-together outside of Dublin, sort of a retreat.
Okay.
And it was by the Dargle River.
Huh.
And so the annual event was called the Waxy's Dargle.
Okay. Yeah. And you carry on the tradition. And I think tradition. The Pogues have a song?
The Pogues actually, there is a song about it, yeah. And there's a couple of bands out there, too, with the name, and there's some restaurants. And
okay.
So it's...
So
it's
you've been on the air, you were saying, September 1998, so the current incarnation of UMFM started in September 98?
That's right.
I think there was one in the 70s.
That's correct, and it was on this current one, and it was on the first weekend that it came back on the air. Yeah.
Wow, so... What were you a student at the time, and that's what got you involved? Or
I was a student, but not then. No.
Oh, okay.
I actually, as an aside, I went to Brandon College originally.
Oh, okay.
And Brandon College was a subset of U of M.
Yeah.
So I have a U of M number somewhere. No, I was part of the radio station being campus and community oriented.
Yeah.
And I've been involved with the Irish Association. We sort of came in that way.
Was there a sense back in 98 that you guys were, you know, at the start of something really exciting and launching, you know, this community radio station? Or was it just everybody was just so busy doing their little part that you didn't think about the big picture?
I think there was there, because up to the time when it came back, there was no alternative radio here in Winnipeg.
Okay.
In the late 80s, there was an entity called Core FM. Was as a co-op that tried to start up.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And those days, and actually had a radio show on that for a while. The CRTC wasn't handing out licenses, low power licenses like they have in the last 20 years.
Yeah, I was going to say, so maybe we're spoiled now looking at that, you know,
that side.
You can find community radio and...
Right. And they got it sort of a chicken and egg. They got a provisional license on being able to get advertising. But they had difficulty getting advertising because they had a provisional license.
Okay.
And we worked out of the Art Space building.
Oh, okay.
Up on the fifth floor with some used CBC.
Was that Core FM or was that UMFM?
Core FM.
Yeah, okay.
No, UFM's always been in this, this spot, yeah.
Oh, wow. So now your show celebrates Celtic music, but I think you use the expression like Celtic flavored.
Yes.
So it's not just fiddle music or not just the wolf tones or anything like that. It's got, you kind of cover the waterfront from everywhere in the world, too.
Yeah, I have a very broad definition. There are still seven nations that speak a Gaelic or Gaelic language,
okay,
like Ireland, Scotland, Wales, Isle of Man, Cornwall, Brittany in northwestern France, and Galicia in northwestern Spain. So there's that tight group, and then there's the whole immigration around the world where all the Irish and Scots came to North America, Australia, other countries. It used to be at one time that if you wanted to learn how to play the Scottish, real Scottish style of music, you came to Cape Breton to learn.
Okay.
Because when they immigrated here from the clearances, they were isolated. Where in Europe, everybody's so close together that it starts.
So it was the pure form of the music.
Pure form,
in those
days, you know. I just try to do a more like almost like a Celtic connection, like bluegrass music is Celtic music. Mm-hmm. Real country music can be deemed to be Celtic music. A lot of the Irish and Scots were cattlemen, and they came over to North America and became cowboys.
Oh, okay.
And they'd be sitting out on the range that you see in the movies, tending the cows, and they'd have the old melody going through their head. And they would just change the words.
And it would kind of get transformed into
There's been bands like the Chieftains from Ireland who go to Nashville to play.
Yes, yeah.
And Appalachian music.
Even the super groups, they're still going.
Chieftains, yes, they are, yeah.
What, now, where did your love for Celtic music come? Was that something very early? Were you involved in a band?
No, one of the reasons why I do the radio show is because I don't play a musical instrument.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So it gives me an opportunity to share the music that...
Yeah.
I sort of grew up on the old British folk music, like Steel Ice Band and Pantangle and groups which other people wouldn't argue is pure Celtic music, but everybody's all influenced.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, when I guess it would have been shortly after you would have started your UMFM show. I mean, there was a real kind of a resurgence of Celtic music. It really became mainstream. You know, thinking back in the 90s and noughties where you had the, you know, the Rankin family, you had Ashley McIsaac, who even had a song in the charts that was Gaelic, language song and stuff like that. What was that like, kind of watching, you know, having a small genre of music, watching it kind of explode in Canada like that, where it was, you know, topping the charts for a number of years?
Yeah, it was, because to say, most people think of being European as the main focus, and I guess a lot of it is, but as you said, there was a lot of people sort of got on that bandwagon. And there was like somebody in every province that you could play. It sort of has died down a bit now. It's not to the same degree. And I think, who knows, part of that reason could be just the way music is recorded now.
Okay.
You know, you don't have to get together in the same studio anymore. Everybody can do their own little bit.
No, that's true.
And then
it all
gets put together. And the world is much smaller now.
Yes, yeah.
And so everybody influences everybody, you know. So they're still traditionalists, you know, like the real jigs and reels still are there. But a lot of the new young bands that come up, of course, are influenced by every other genre that's out there.
Yeah.
You know?
So after almost 20 years here and at Core FM before that, so a radio show, and do you do a CKJS show?
Yeah, I'm still doing a show at CKJS called Prairie Kaylee on Sunday nights.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. I came to that after Core FM wrapped up.
Oh, I'd say, okay, yeah, because my parents are Irish, so we've heard, I think, CKJS first, and then when I used to go over on Sunday for dinner, we would put Waxy's Dargle on, and both my parents, my dad's from Dublin, my mom's just from outside it. So after doing a show for this, I mean, it must be in your DNA. I mean, can you see a day where, you know, it's like, oh, I'm going to, you know, hang up the earphones?
You never know.
Yeah.
We'll continue doing one show at a time, and...
Yeah.
I prefer, like doing them live. I have no desire to do pre-record or, you know, a podcast being the only way to do it. You know, that I'd prefer to do it live because you can interact with people who call in.
Yes,
different, you know. And if you do contests and that, if you pre-record, then you got to do it by email or
another
way, you know.
That's right. Okay.
So, well, I haven't really set a time frame.
Yeah.
I've done just about 900 shows.
Wow. there's barely a person even in commercial radio in the city that's been on the air that long. I mean, maybe Howard Manshine he was part of that.
He was also an innovator here in the 70s.
Right. No, but there's very few people left.
But there's, as I say, you know, by listening, you know, I like to play some of the old music from the 60s and 70s, but there's lots of new groups, both in Canada, the States, Australia, all. So it's they may not classify themselves as Celtic, maybe in that narrow sense.
There's always new content coming out.
But there's lots of new young musicians coming around. So there's lots of material.
Yeah.
When I first started doing radio, because I'm working mostly out of my own library, I figure in 6 months I'd be running out of music. and then I looked at this real broad Celtic connection side, and I say you can, every country in the world could likely connect. I've interviewed Lorena McKennett a couple of times.
Oh, okay.
And she believes that the pentatonic sound came out of India.
Oh,
and
I see.
One branch came up through Europe, the Balkans, to Ireland, Scotland. Another group went to China, a branch. And the chieftains were the first North American or Western group to play in China. And they sat down and played with the Chinese musicians.
Oh, and there were similarities.
Similarities. You know, there's a chorus, like flutes and harps, but there's a bunch.
Well, when you look at, you know, a Chinese symphony orchestra, you know, a lot of the traditional instruments, I mean, you certainly do see, you know, things resembling the fiddle and things like that. And,
yes.
Yeah. Okay, well, great. Well, we're going to move on. Sure. Jeff Robson,
Hi, Christian.
To go home.
Yeah.
And I met this summer because starting this summer program.
Well, we met before. You just didn't know it because I'm not that memorable.
That's right. I didn't know it. Well, there's so many hosts here. You just see people coming and going. It's hard. We should have to wear badges. Which, because you only hear people by voice. I don't know. Somebody pops in. I don't know if they're a host that I've listened to.
That's because we've got faces for radio.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. So I snuck into the time slot after you, and so I've been listening to the show a lot. I always listen to the shows when I'm coming in, both for the good music and also in case there's a catastrophe in the studio.
It's been invaded. Usually the catastrophe is my fault.
If it's been invaded by bees or something, I'd just turn around and drive back home. So tell the band to go home. So you started in 2001. The show started in 2002.
Right.
So did that or Steel Belt, which came first? How did you get involved in the station?
I guess I kind of started the opposite of you. I started sitting over there and pushing buttons. Actually, it was over here at the time, but I was just a board operator at first. I mean, I really wanted to be involved, and I'd applied to be a volunteer a couple of times, and then 2001, I got this weird call from Dr. Tung, who used to do some volunteer coordinating at the time, and he said, it turned out we lived on the same street growing up. So he recognized my name and called and said, well, you know, maybe we could find something for you to do. And I came down and they wanted me to be a board operator on this Sunday show called The Songwriter Circle, which was a singer-songwriter show with lots of live guests and stuff. And eventually I just started talking more and more and kind of took the damn thing over, and I've been here ever since.
Okay. And tell me about the show now, because did it morph out of Songwriter Circle?
Yeah, for sure. I don't do quite as much of the in-studio stuff as my predecessor did, and my version of the genre, we call ourselves singer-songwriter music. Mm-hmm. My definition's a bit broader than that. It's not quite the folk show that it supposed to be in the beginning, but
that's a great thing about a show, is it can morph and change over time. That's something you have a freedom to do here in community radio.
Absolutely.
That maybe if you're in commercial radio, you know the strict here's your 100 song playlist. Or
I have huge respect for folks like Lyle and Amanda who can do a genre and do it so well, but I have ADD, so I'm all over the place, so I can't stick to one thing.
Well, one thing that you have kept to is doing a lot of interviews.
I've
had a lot of great interviews, and some of them very, very personal, very intimate, so you've obviously built...
I've also done some really terrible ones, Christian.
Oh, okay.
Some classic stinkers.
Okay. Well, who are some of the people that you've spoken to over the years?
Oh, just every... I can't believe the people that I get to talk to me all the time. It's crazy. People like James McMurtry and Eliza Gilkison and Brandi Carlile in the States. I even interviewed John Mayer before I knew who John Mayer was, which is kind of funny. And then we've had tons and tons of live guests in here, and I've just made so many friends through doing this that I can't believe the people who will talk to me because of this microphone in my face.
Yeah, that's an interesting aspect, and we'll probably get into that a little later in the roundtable about what it means to be, you know, a radio show host versus doing, and, you know, as Lyle was saying, you know, going the podcast route or something. What So, and I noticed that you also kind of sponsor shows, present shows, and things like that. Do you see?
Yeah, not so much. I mean, I'm certainly an enthusiastic booster of shows. I mean, I host shows at my house. I started doing house concerts as a result of the show.
Oh, okay.
They're fantastic.
And yeah, I've been asked to host shows all over the place, which has been amazing. And even once at the West End Cultural Center, I got to host a Tell the Band to Go Home night during their grand reopening, which I thought was amazing.
Yeah, that'd be great. Those great opportunities to get out there and meet people and promote the music.
Oh, it's unbelievable the things I've done. I mean, I just got to travel to Germany this year to meet a longtime listener and supporter and just someone who's become a great friend and inspiration to me. And just the thought of, like, you know, getting invited to go to this festival in Germany because of this show is just... It blows my mind. You know, we always kind of joke about nobody listening, but the people who do listen are so important to us that.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, the title of the show, Tell the Band to Go Home, is that's a reference. That's a late Canadian singer-songwriter.
Right. Right. Yeah, there's a singer-songwriter named Paul McLeod who had an EP called Tell the Band to Go Home, and it perfectly kind of summed up. It was just him and his guitar, and so I like that stripped back notion. Beautiful songs that nobody would have known about, you know, and so many people wouldn't have heard if I hadn't started doing this, you know. And I think that's a huge part of what we do, is playing this music that doesn't get heard elsewhere. And I loved his music, and I love so much of this music so much, and I have to share it with people so that they get the same joy out of it that I do.
Yeah. Now, what do you you do a second show here? So everybody here actually does double duty on shows, but you do two at UMFM,
right?
Right. What's the
which is
show?
A bit weird. I mean, originally, actually, speaking of Howard Manshine, I got to be the board operator on Monday Night Free Range Radio with Howard Manshine for a long time, and that was just the greatest education I could have ever had. I was in awe and had so much fun with that. And eventually, the opportunity came up for they needed a host. I wasn't supposed to be a host. I was, it was my friends who were going to do the show, and I was just going to help them get started. But they all quit, and I kept going. So,
and what's that? That's Steel Belted
Free Range Radio. Yeah, on Thursday nights.
On Thursday. Now, what's the personality difference with Steel Belted?
Well, you know, originally it was me and a bunch of friends kind of goofing around. Mm-hmm. But so now it's mostly the same. I play a little bit more. It's an evening show, so it gets a little more rocking and a little more. We call it a roots rock show, so it's kind of got a bit more energy to it, I suppose, than the Sunday afternoon one.
Great. Okay. Well, thank you. And we will come to Gil Comfort.
Save the best for last.
Finally. Yes, I know, Gail. Keeping you sitting there in the corner. Now, Gail, when I started here as a host, so for 2.5 years, you were the host before me, so you saw many of my kind of
and listened to
goofs,
your shows.
Goofs as I sat here with nothing playing in the background and panicking, and so thank you for all of that. Now, Gail is a regular fixture if you go to places like the West End Cultural Center, Times Changed, and places like that. So you do a lot of firsthand research on your topic, and so the subject of your show is really kind of roots, country, folk.
Well, the subject of my show is really me.
Okay. Just what
I
you
thought
like.
It was me.
You and what you like.
You talk about me so much. I thought it was a tribute show.
Well, that too, Jeff. You know, Jeff is right about our shows in that the best thing about my show is, aside from very, very good music, is the people, the other presenters, these people in this room, and the people that you meet through the music, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah.
And for me, that was always the big deal. I have to say, I've only been doing my show, Comfort Cafe, for 5 years.
Only five.
That's right.
But you did the other show for much longer.
I did for about 17 years, and I just gave it up this year.
Oh,
and
really?
And so it's a UK.
So that's interesting. And you weren't in the UK. You were producing it here.
Well, I was in the UK for the first 12 years.
Oh,
I lived in London.
Okay.
And just really quickly, how it got started
I moved...
I had a broken heart, as it sometimes happens. And I rushed over to the UK to you know, just sort of, and I was going to be there for 1 year, and I was looking for, and then I was there for 1 year, and I was a bit lonely, and so I thought, what can I do? And I looked in the phone book under country music, and it was there. There was a thing said country music. So I phoned them up. The guy was in the studio. Now, coincidentally, you're not going to believe this, they were half a block from my flat. That's where the studio was. So I said, you know, I'm interested in radio, and well, sort of like volunteers do here. Yeah. And I, you know, could I come and sit in, whatever.
And did you have radio experience prior to that?
None.
This is
nothing.
A cold call. This is a, okay.
Just phone them up. And so he said, well, I'm going down to the pub. How about joining me? So I did. I went down to the pub, and the guys were there, and the rest is history. So then I was working in a law firm, and every day before work, I would go down and sit in with the morning guy, and I was the only woman, and there was like, at that time, there was like 10 guys or 15 guys and me, but they liked me, and the reason why they liked me was because of my voice, and because of my voice, not my voice, but because I have a country voice, they said, I sounded American.
Okay.
And so,
yeah, they love that over there.
Yeah, they love that over there. And I kept on saying, no, 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 I'm Canadian. So how it worked was that basically I started sitting in, and then within about 3 weeks, I started talking a bit. And as Jeff will tell you, anybody will tell you here, I talk a lot. So, and then I started talking more, and then, you know, same idea. You're just there. You're willing. Yeah. I learned the board, and then I started doing my own show. And one of my mandates was Canadian music.
Okay.
Now, I have to just tell you, I knew nothing about music. Nothing. First gig they sent me on was Lucinda Williams, backed up with Jim Lauderdale. And I didn't know who Lucinda was. And I didn't know anything. And from there on, and then what happened was I became the Canadian presence. So whenever a Canadian artist came to town, the promoters would say, oh, Gail, come to our gig because we've got so-and-so there. And I used to do interviews. I haven't done any real interviews since I came back. I used to do a lot of interviews, and we'd do, like you're doing, the whole show, one person.
Okay.
You know, but I haven't done it. I've sort of lost my confidence in that area. I don't know why. But the Comfort Cafe is very important to me because it has hooked me up, is that the right word, with all these people. And my show doesn't have any specific genre. So if the Jazz Fest is on, I play jazz.
Show, sure.
When the Blues Fest is on, I play blues. When I'm at Interstellar Radio, I play that.
Yeah.
If I go to a gig and I get excited, I play that. If someone sends me an album and it's gorgeous, I play that. So when I said it, the show was about me, what I meant was it's sort of like the things that are filling me at that time. The thing about all these people is that they're absolutely passionate about what they play, and they not only love it, but they know it, and they've got excellent taste. I get lots of stuff from Lyle. I get lots of stuff from Jeff, John Prentice, Ray Alexander, everybody. I get feed, you know, I listen to UMFM.
Yeah. So when you came back then from the UK, did you charged right into UMFM and said, my God, I need this fix. I need to keep this radio show thing going, or?
Well, I hate to mention his name.
No, you don't.
But I was trying to find a studio to do my show. I had no, I wasn't going to do my show, which was called The Comfort Zone.
And it was still going on in the UK.
Yes, and I was looking
still had to produce it locally.
I wanted to produce it locally, and everybody wanted me to. I was going to quit when I came home, but they were just adamant. No, we need you. And so someone over there in the UK knew Jeff. And a listener who loved his show, and a guy that I knew really, really well, didn't love my show as much as he loved Jeff. And so he said to me, get in touch with this guy, try. So I did try, and he did help me.
We kind of bonded over a mutual love of Willie P. Bennett. You emailed me because I'd done a show about Willie, and
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Because then he knew I was okay. And then he helped me. And all I ever did for the first 2 years was my show.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And I've just produced it here.
Yeah.
And then Jared invited me to do a show. And that's how it came.
And that's how it came about. Oh, okay. Yeah.
But I love
that's
my show.
Interesting way to do it.
It all has
And technology, isn't it wonderful, right? You know, you can, you know, both you and Penny can produce shows that, you know, for places elsewhere in the world from right here in little auxiliary studio tucked in the back there. So.
The connection, I think, with what we were all saying is the connection is so important, and the good music is never ending. It's there, and really, as I often say on my show, you could go out in Winnipeg every single night of the week and see something really fantastic. It's a music city.
Yeah. Like I said, you're a mainstay at some of the venues. What's your favorite venue? If a venue is saying, you know, we're gonna build a condo upstairs and you can live there and just have like free access back and forth. What venue is just your absolute favorite in the city?
That's a very hard question. Very hard. I would say I do enjoy the West End Cultural Center, and I do believe that has to do with. The week I came home from the UK was when they were reopening.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know the old West End Cultural Center. And I was all alone, and I went every single night that week to every gig because they had all special things going on. And I think maybe that's why I have an affinity for that particular place. Because of that feeling of coming home.
Yeah. And you were from Winnipeg before you went to the UK.
Winnipeg is my hometown.
Okay. So it was a home. So that was your homecoming, how you reintegrated back into Winnipeg.
Was the West End Cultural Center.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, great. Well, okay, so there we go. There is everybody. What we're going to do is I think I have one commercial. The mayor may not be there. Sometimes I press play and nothing happens. So, but we have one PSA we're going to play, and we're going to come back, and we're going to do a roundtable and just talk about whatever. So we'll be back in just a moment on 101.5. UMFM.
Into the Music is Winnipeg's leading indie record store, period. Down at 245 McDermott Avenue in the heart of the Exchange, the store boasts over 3,000 square feet of everything from the latest indie pop to psych and prog rarities, punk and metal classics, and everything in between. They have the largest selection of used vinyl LPs and 7 inches in the city, with most priced under $10, plus outstanding collectibles. Into the Music offers the most because it buys the most and pays the best price for your collections, large or small. Check our website at intothemusic.ca for up-to-date listings of new and used titles for sale, plus lots of info on what our customers are looking for. Into the Music opens 7 days a week at 245 McDermott in the Exchange, Winnipeg's quality collectible record store.
Well, and there we go, and welcome back. Wow, turning off 5 mics at once. I need to get my foot up there to help me out, turn all those mics on. Welcome back. West End Dumplings Radio Edition on 101.5 UMFM. I'm Christian Cassidy, your host, and we have 4 other hosts. We're host heavy today. I have Jeff Robson from Tell the Band to Go Home.
Hi.
Gil Comfort of the Comfort Cafe. Penny Lane, Punks and Parkas, and Lyle Skinner of Waxy's Dargle.
Penny Lane does have a real name, too.
No, I don't.
And there's a few people around here that have fake names. Nobody told me.
Yeah.
Nobody told me I could pick a name when I started.
That's how you know if you've been here a long time, if you know my real name.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Like, there's no better name than Christian Cassidy.
Yeah, well, but I could have picked another name. I didn't know. And then I started, and I found a bunch of people have different names. So one question here is a little quickie question here. Who has the biggest record collection here? Somebody throw out a number and everybody else can figure.
Are you talking LPs or the whole kit and
caboodle?
The
whole kit and caboodle.
I don't count. I've lost track.
Yeah, my basement is out of control. It's anybody who's ever been to my basement is
my partner
afraid.
Says I have too many. How's that?
And do you think that, you know, the next generation where everything's digital? You know, somebody's going to say, oh, yeah, I get a lot of music, but it just means they have a bunch of download, you know, they have a big download or something like that.
Streaming these days, too.
Yeah, exactly. You don't even need to have collected them, so that you know, they may miss out on that whole thing of hunting down, you know, finding the perfect album, you know, finding the album you're looking for, or finding that treasure, buying that on sale album or at the back of the bin that you end up taking home and thinking, wow.
I took my son, who's going to be 8, record shopping with me the other day, too. And he's like, what is this, right? Because for him, it's streaming. If he wants to hear a song, he puts on Spotify.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, let's go record shopping.
Well, you know, we need, or I shouldn't say we, because I need to have either something in my hand, and I'll tell you why. I want to know who wrote the song, and I want to know who's singing on the song. If you've got a, you know, like...
Who played that great solo? I need to know that.
Yeah, who played that guitar? Sure. I mean, I know it sounds a bit nerdy, but, you know, it's great because then you can say, oh, I love that guy. I heard you talk.
Yes, well, that's right. Okay,
and then you can play them as well and educate your audience that these people play together well.
Kind of pull that string and find out who's...
Yeah, and who wrote it as well, because sometimes you play a fantastic song and you think that the person whose album it is wrote it, and you find out no.
And they have their whole other, they have their own collection.
It's important to me to have a thing in my hand to look at while I'm listening to the music.
Yeah, that's right.
I just, due to my ADD, I suppose, I have thousands and thousands of files on my hard drive, but none of them stick out. But when I'm planning my show and I look at my pile of CDs, then all the ideas start bouncing off one another, and I'd much rather go to the shelf and pull it off there than look for the stupid file on my computer.
That's true.
But with postage costs, like to ship out of the States now is $10 almost, and ship from Europe, so a lot of the people who produce good music, but they're a small independent, can't afford
just to. We used to get a lot of music in the mail, but
so it's a lot of it's digital now, you know.
Yeah, that's true. Now, this question's open to everybody. I'm going to direct it first at Gail and Penny. Women, we have an AGM every year where, on pain of death, all the show hosts have to have to attend. So we get to see what everybody else looks like, and which is frightening, and so which is pleasant sometimes and frightening sometimes. But there are a lot of male faces, and you know, considering, I don't know what the makeup of, say, the student population is, you know, probably 50-50 or something like that. Why are there so few women at UMFM?
That's a good question.
You know, I don't really know the answer, but I go to a lot of gigs, and I notice that it is primarily men at the gigs.
Okay.
Or they might have, you know, a partner with them hanging on or whatever. But a lot of times, it seems to me that it's the men who are interested in listening to the music and have memories attached to that music. I mean, in every radio entity that I've been with, I've basically been the only woman, or one other woman would be there with me. And I
you think it's just an industry thing generally, not
look
just
at any radio station. It's the same thing. I think we do remarkably well compared to other
stations. It's gotten a lot better, sure.
Yeah, and Penny, you've probably seen a lot of young women.
Oh, for sure.
Being
I've trained
in
a lot.
The position.
It's definitely, it's the numbers are starting to tip more in the female favor, I think. But I know, especially for my show, mod is a very laddie culture. You'll hear that over and over. It's a very male-orientated subculture, as most of them kind of are. But this one really is. And to be a female in that subculture, I see the disparity, right? You see it. And it's rare. Yeah. But it can work in our advantage, right? I'm a niche.
You
know, it's
true.
Like there's 100 mod podcasts out there. How many of them are hosted by a woman?
One or two. Now, something that Lyle touched on earlier that I wanted to ask is, I mean, we could all be sitting at home in our pajamas doing the show. Not collectively, but you know, individually.
No.
Well, we could do it collectively.
We could be sitting around here in our pajamas.
You know, with the way technology is nowadays, you know, coming into a studio when it's minus 40 and, you know, 7 o'clock at night and it's pitch black outside and... you know, podcasts have, you know, become a huge thing. What brings all of you down here week after week, year after year, to still come and do live radio? And Lyle, I'll throw that to you first because you already started down that track.
Right. I think, as I said earlier, it just seems to be something different, even just using the board, you know, rather than doing something at home and staying focused for an hour, where if I do pre-record a show, if I'm at the Folk Fest or something, I'd like to do that over a week or 10 days. You know, it's just a different feel.
So the immediacy of it.
Yeah, and the other is, you know, dealing with people who call in, you know, and that's type
true.
Of thing.
That's true, and you do invite people to, you know, to call in. I've never learned how to work the phone on here, so I never bother.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I think that's that, is, and it just keeps me sort of motivated that, okay, I've got this slot time, and I plan my life around it and go, so it... And I just find it's easier to do the show because you can sort of watch the clock live. Like, do I talk more? Do I play more?
Yeah.
Whatever, where if you're pre-recording, you spend most of the time trying to get this down to 57 minutes or whatever we're allowed.
That's true. You spend so much more time fiddling around. Here, you can't fiddle around, right? Yeah, you have 1 hour, and good or bad, it's all going to fit into that, right, into that 1 hour, so...
I think that's like what says like the main reasons on that is.
Yeah. Anybody else?
Well, I do both. Like, I do Punks and Parkas live every week, but the other show, the podcast we do, Maximum Rhythm of Booze, it's strictly pre-recorded, and I like doing Punks and Parkas better.
Okay.
Because it keeps me on my toes. Yeah. You have to think on the fly. You have to plan it a little bit. Anything can happen in here. I've had so many bad things happen in here. There's a joke that, you know, every show of mine has a mistake in it. Always. Yeah. But when we do the podcast, it
just
sounds... on a good day. On a good day. It's a good day. But the podcast can be edited to sound perfect.
Yeah.
And it is edited to sound perfect.
That's true. Nicely polished.
So it's... I like doing both of them for different reasons.
Okay.
But
I kind of have a different feel.
Yeah. I like the live. I like... There's something tangible about being at the board and putting records on or putting a CD on, as opposed to doing.
And Gail, you did both for a while too.
Yes, and I'm with Penny. I enjoy the rush of live. It's like a performance, and you have to. The adrenaline does, and you feel happy. And also, you listen to the music. When you're listening to the music, music is off, you have something to say because it's not just. It's for you and your listeners, right? And so you feel something, the music gives you something, and your listeners know that you love the music. They can hear it. And when I podcast, I can still make mistakes on podcasting.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Yep.
You know,
make them out all the time.
When I pre-record. But it is more perfect. But it takes, as Lyle says, it takes way longer.
Yeah, absolutely,
Why?
For me, I don't listen to the music when I'm doing my podcast.
No,
I just drop the files into the stupid program.
That's right. So
it's
not
nearly as much fun as sitting here and listening to music for 2 hours.
Yep.
Yeah,
no.
That's true. So what, now, you know, looking around at the state of commercial radio in Canada, North America, the world, you know, it's been gutted in recent years. You know, they have very few staff left, and all the programming is, at least in Canada, is done out of Toronto.
Yeah.
Satellite radio, where the programming is done, you know,
God knows where.
Yeah, you know, God knows where. So it's been a really bad few years for commercial radio. What do you think? I mean, the sense I get is community radio is strong, that people do listen to it and things like that. What's the sense you get? What do you think the future, 5 years from now, do you think there'll be, you know, as many community radio stations or more, or what do you think the scene's going to look like?
We appeal to a fringe audience, let's be honest. We're not appealing to the same people who listen to commercial radio. It's different people who are seeking out something a little bit more, I apologize for the word, but intelligent, or something a little bit more stimulating than hearing the same song over and over on commercial radio. Yeah. Plus, we, you know, are always doing something new and something different instead of hearing the same thing all the time. And so most people want to hear, they want to know what they're going to hear on the radio. So they don't listen to us because they like that familiarity.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
every fourth song is Phil Collins.
Yeah, but we look for a different, we are different than that. We would never put up with that. And there are enough of us out there that find enough value in that I think, I can't see it going away.
Mm-hmm.
I would never listen to commercial radio. I would die.
And also that passion for the music. When you listen to commercial radio, those guys
robots
don't even care about the music.
Yeah.
Like, they're just putting links and links and links, and it's just awful. there's no personality there. Yeah. And I mean, it's they've got a job, and I applied. Well, I did. I applied because I wanted to work in radio.
Yeah.
And they told me, you know, there was these certain rules. One of the things they told me, don't laugh on air. And the other thing they told me, and me, I laugh all the time and cry too, but that's another story. But, and the other thing they told me is one thought, one link. Have you ever heard that one?
Yes.
That's a radio thing.
Keep it simple.
And people like us, we got like 12 thoughts in there. Yeah. We want to tell our listeners everything about the music.
10-minute preamble to a song.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
I've always said to myself too with my show is when it starts to feel like work is when I'll stop doing it.
Yeah.
I think once, you know, commercial radio is work. It's a job. They go in Monday to Friday. Here it's not work. I mean, yeah, there's days when I rather sit at home in my underwear and not be here.
Yeah.
But it's never felt like work enough that I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
And I think it comes across.
And Lyle, I mean, you were with Core FM, so you were at, you know, that was probably the first commercial community radio station in the city, or certainly one of the first big ones, I guess.
Yeah, after... University of Manitoba went down, you know.
The original one.
Yeah. I say that was one of the reasons why I believe that that co-op was created, because there was no alternative radio in Winnipeg at that time.
And do you see as time goes on that because, you know, we do have now nostalgia radio has started up. CQUW, you know, broadcasts, you know, over the airwaves rather than just in the, that happened when I was going to university there at the tail end of it. So
well, there's also UW and Red River and the other colleges.
Assiniboine Community College.
They all have radio stations now.
And some of the smaller towns now, I think, are picking that up, that, you know, have lost their commercial radio station or taking up really kind of small geographic licenses. It is interesting. Like, we don't get, just for people who are listening, I mean, we don't know who listens, how many people listen, because we don't belong to, we don't get the book, because it costs thousands of dollars to, you know, to join it. So we literally have no idea of how many people are listening. So the feedback we do get is the emails, or when people bump into you at an event or something like that, and you kind of find out indirectly, you know, who listens to you or how many people... You know, how many people out there
are. One of the other things that's really changed is doing our Pledge-O-Rama, which a bunch of us old-timers never, ever wanted to do. Like, we fought against it, and we held out as long as we possibly could because we didn't really want to go that route. But it's been such a great thing to see all these people who are willing to give us money because they like what we do. Yeah. That just blows my mind, the amount of money that people are willing to donate.
Yeah,
so that we can keep doing this. That has just been
one
of the most rewarding
and
eye-opening
things
ever.
That is one of the few direct links kind of with people.
Yeah.
You know, now, Lyle, you would probably, I mean, you have people that call in and things like that. But it is, Pledge-O-Rama. I mean, people I've never, it's like, who are these people?
Yeah. You know, it's pretty rare that people phone me. I mean, I know everybody wants to talk to Lyle. Lyle's great. But nobody ever phones me. Nobody wants to talk to me. So I never know if people are out there. But when I see these names on the pledge sheet, or I meet somebody at a show and they say, I've been listening to you for years, I just go... Really? Why? Thank you.
Yeah.
And I think also when the artists say to you, oh, you're Gail Comfort. I love
absolutely,
that.
Absolutely,
And then,
and then they say, you know, there's some people here today that told me that they came here because you told them to come.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, these are small gigs. Don't get me wrong. But still, it makes you feel good, because what I like to think is that we win our listeners over one at a time.
Yeah.
You know, but
absolutely. And that's, you know, it'd be interesting to see what happens in commercial radio just in such
shambles.
Yeah, such trouble that, you know, who knows, maybe 5 years from now there'll be two or three other community radio stations in the city, and be interesting. So there's the thing. If you have a show that you like and you've been listening to for years and you've never made contact,
let us
check
know.
Out the last roundtable I'll do. I'll get everybody to say, like, how to best get in contact with you online. But everybody has a Facebook page or a website or something like that. Definitely, except for Gail, who's shaking her head. but you know, it's something. Yeah, if you know, you meet a host or there's a show that you like, you know, definitely make a bit of contact and tell them you're listening, and you know, very very intimate that way. Unlike you know, big commercial radio where you know, fans are, you know, measured in tens of thousands, right? Numbers are measured in tens of thousands.
If I know a friend is having a birthday or something, I'll play a bunch of songs for them, that kind of thing. That never happens on commercial radio. Never. I mean, you used to be able to dedicate a song once in a while. Even that, I don't think really happens anymore. But, you know, if somebody phones in, and I remember I have friends who listen to the show who I've become friends with because of the show, and they phoned in one time. They were working in the garden, so I played a bunch of songs about gardening. And they just loved that. And, you know, I love being able to do that for people and having that connection with people that doesn't exist anywhere else.
Absolutely. And Penny, I'll get you to help me with this because you I don't think you're the volunteer coordinator anymore.
I'm not.
Right?
There not is a as new of one. Like
but you were for a long time. So, you know, for people who are listening, whether they be community members, because this is obviously, we're not all, none of us are students there. But, you know, if you are a student here or you are in the community and stuff like that, how do you get involved? How do you jump in?
Super easy. You can come down to the station, which is at the third floor University Center during regular-ish business hours and talk to Jared, who's our station manager, or Michael, who is our program director. You can go to umfm.com under the contact us link. There will be a link to the new volunteer coordinator. But you can email anybody here at the station, and we'll get involved.
Yeah, and it's super neat, easy. It's a neat studio. Like, if you haven't been to it, it's a beautiful, big studio. I mean, I've been on a lot of the commercial radio studios for different things I've done in the past, and, you know, this is a fabulous, fabulous studio. We got the big racks of CDs. Come get a feel. Talk to folks here. And, you know, as you were pointing out, there's you start out as a tech.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not.
There's other ways to get involved.
If you don't want to be, if you don't think, oh, I don't think I can do the on. You know what?
I've had lots of people just want to come and sit and watch and just hang out.
I've had fans come on the show.
I love that.
Yeah.
Learn how to do the board. Or when people want to come and play a set of music or something like that, I love that.
Can I come on your show?
No. I'm just kidding. Anytime, you know.
But yeah, there are a lot of ways to get involved. You know, if you're not the type of person who thinks you can do it in front of a mic, or that maybe after a couple of years you might want to do something in front of the mic.
See, that's the other thing about this is that in real life I would never talk this much. Like, if you see me out in real life, probably the reason why you didn't remember me is because I probably didn't say a word to you because I wasn't on the air at the time.
Yeah.
If you see me in real life, I'm staring at the floor and I don't say a word. I'm painful. Shy, but something about this right here.
Yeah.
And suddenly I have a purpose and I have a platform to stand on, and it's changed my life forever. I mean, I'm not a word of a lie. I'm a very different person because of.
I get asked to do a lot of public appearances, and I'm like, no, I'm sorry. Yeah. And they're like, but you're on the radio.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
the assumption
sees that me. Yeah. Like, it's different.
The and also UMFM does a lot of community events and things like that.
Yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
there are a lot of, you know, kind of non in front of the mic things that you can help out,
tons,
and that'll
tons
get
of stuff.
Get you involved and get your flavor, get you, you know, if there's a certain type of music.
Yeah, and if you don't
like
even know what
whatever,
you want to do, we can kind of help, you know, see what you're good at and push in the right direction.
And there is talk as well, talk radio, which is, you know, very interesting at a university.
Yeah.
Because they talk about all kinds of stuff that they wouldn't get to talk about
on
mainstream
radio. Well, look at my show. Right? We talk about Manitoba history. See, I'll never go international because I'm so niche-y that.
Well, you don't know. You never know, Christian.
So, okay. Well, you know what? We only got a couple of minutes left. So I think what we're going to do is a quick roundtable. Again, just you, the name of your show, and how best to get in contact with you if they want to find out more about the show. And we'll start again with Law.
Sure, my show is Waxy Starkin, and it's going to start in 2 minutes, and so I got to get ready. But you can always get in touch by sending an email to Waxies, and that's spelled WAXIES at shaw.ca.
Yeah, I'm Jeff, and Tell the Band to Go Home's here on Sunday afternoons. Tellthebandtogohome.com. You just search that up, and you'll find me probably right away. And yeah, I love hearing from people.
It's Penny Lane. It's Punks and Parkas. It's facebook.com/punksandparkas. Or you can look at my other show. We have a website now. It's www.maximumrnb. And you can leave me feedback on both sites.
Great. And Gail?
And I'm Gail Comfort. My show is Comfort Cafe. It starts right after Lyle, 6 o'clock. And the only way you can contact me, unless you want my home number, is because I don't have a cell. But it's Gail_comfort@hotmail.com.
Terrific. Or keep an eye out for you at the West End Cultural Center.
Yes.
You'll probably be there.
I'm there. I'm everywhere.
Okay, well, thanks. I'm Christian Cassidy. And
I want to thank you, Christian.
Yes,
you're one of the hardest working people. The research that you put into your show is unbelievable.
Thank you.
I show up and play what I feel like playing, and the work that you put into making such an informative show, I have huge respect for that, and I've learned so much from your show.
Great. Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Please come back.
Thanks to everybody for tuning in to this special summer edition of West End Dumplings and westenddumplings.blogspot.com if you want to catch up on some past episodes and other writings that I do. So we're cutting into Waxy's time here, so I'm just going to put on a little Radio Gaga as our fade out music, and thanks for joining us on 101.5.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yeah.